SMQBs, this is episode 185 with a semi-special guest appearance all the way from Toronto. We have a Canadian joining us on Canadian Thanksgiving. Moose Jaw, happy Thanksgiving.
Okay, Canadian. Welcome.
Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
All right, let's start with you then. Who do you bring into the bar this week?
I'm bringing in... This is a reference that I don't think you guys would know. It's like maybe Mr. Phelan, based on our conversation. I would bring in the last captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs to win a Stanley Cup, and that's George Armstrong. Because this
is he alive?
Year, no, he passed away a number of years ago.
You're allowed to bring dead or alive to the bar.
I'd want to
realize it was supernatural.
Yeah, I want to sit with him and actually understand what it was like to win a Stanley Cup in Toronto, because I think this could be a very special year in Toronto. So that's who I'd bring.
Oh,
I'm changed wow. mine now.
Here
I'm
we
gonna,
go.
I'm going to bring Ted Williams' head to the bar.
Cryogenically frozen.
Good.
All right. Rooster, is that really who you're bringing?
No. I'm bringing Dante DiVincenzo to the bar.
Oh,
after his little dust up with Rick Brunson. I mean, for God's sakes, it's a preseason game, Dante. Chill out. We still love you in New York.
No, you don't.
You'll always be a Nick. Always be a Nick. Don't screw that up by getting into beefs with your best friend's dad. That's just a dumb move. Chill out.
All right, Pope, who are you bringing?
I'm bringing the guy behind me. Jarrah Jones.
You're going to kill the man with the alcohol. I guess that's your plan.
Well, that's my goal. My goal is to bring him cyanide shot. I don't know if that'll work anyway.
Again, based on that picture, I don't know if he's alive.
Yeah, I know, right? Happy fucking birthday, Jerry. You know,
maybe you could kick another field goal for him in celebration.
Yeah, right, yes. I'm going to punch you later, but right now, you're coming to the bar with me, and you're going to find out what the hell you're going to do for the rest of the year with this gutless team.
All right. House, what about you?
Well, I think some people are going to be very happy with who I'm bringing to the bar, because I'm bringing the Grim Reaper to the bar with me. And I'm asking that he visit upon Nick Sirianni on Milk's behalf. Billy Napier, perhaps on Jerry Jones, although I want Grim to just skip right over
Jerry Jones. Was the Grim Reaper.
I want the proverbial Grim Reaper that shows up to cut people to show up at the bar so we can talk about his plans ahead with Nick Sirianni.
Oh, we'll get to that. This is going to be fun today. I'm looking forward to this. All right. I am bringing Ruth Chepngentic to the bar, and Ruth Chepngentic just set the women's marathon world record at the Chicago Marathon yesterday, running it in 2 hours, 9 minutes and 56 seconds. She took 2 minutes off of the previous world record and is the first woman to ever run a sub 2 hour, 10 minute marathon. So she's earned a drink or two.
She's drinking.
Where's from?
A fellow marathoner for you.
From Kenya.
From Kenya. Okay.
Yeah.
Moose, in case you haven't picked up on it, Bison has taken up running lately and it's become a heavy topic.
Retaking it up. And just for comparison's sake, my 10 mile time was an hour and 46, and she ran 26.2 in 2 hours and 9 minutes. So,
wow. How many stops did you have on your run for a drink and a snack?
None. We actually ran the whole way. All right, let's jump into it. Let's get to the NFL. House, take us away. The floor is yours.
Thank you, gentlemen. I've missed you guys dearly.
Yeah, but, welcome back.
Thank you. I didn't intend on coming back with such an inauspicious event as yesterday's football game, but I will not be silent today. I will not be silent. Because what we have is DEFCON 1 in Philly right now. Now, you would think, why is a guy about to go off on a coach who has taken them to the Super Bowl, on a coach who has a pretty healthy winning record, on a coach that apparently the players seem to be standing behind? But we have suffered through a lot of bad coaches in Philly. We have suffered through Doc Rivers. We have suffered through Rich Kotite. We have suffered through Ray Rhodes. We have suffered through Jim Fregosi. This clown, Nick Sirianni, is the worst. He is the absolute worst. He is in over his skis. He doesn't know what he is doing. And let me tell you something, buddy. Let me tell you something, Nick Sirianni. You brought this all on yourself. All of it on yourself. Your job is to coach the game of football, preferably keeping your word to lead the offense to your assistant coach, Kellen Moore, who you said you were going to let call the plays, and not meddle, not interfere, not have this obscene arrogance that on the most simple of plays, on the most simple of downs, just go with the textbook. They're the most easy decisions. But no, you're smarter than everybody else. A wide receiver coach who never coached at any level before the Eagles is smarter than everybody else. So what do? You step yourself and the team and the city down to the worst excuse for a football team in the Cleveland Browns. I mean, that team is from hunger. That team stinks. And we barely, by the skin of our teeth, got by. And it's not because the players on the field. Why is Philly so animated today? It's because we have Saquon Barkley. We have A.J. Brown. We have Jalen Hurts. We have Devontae Smith. We have Lane Johnson. With the list goes on and on and on. The fact that we are just sliding by a team as pathetic as the Cleveland Browns. But it doesn't end there because everybody knows this. When the game ended, what did Nick Sirianni do? He decided to get in it with the fans behind him who were upset with the way the team was going, with the way the game was going. And this arrogant clown decided to jaw. And he knew he was in trouble as soon as that game ended. So what did he do for his post-game presser? The guy brings emotional shields to protect him. Three kids. Now you tell me how many NFL head coaches after a game will bring three kids up on their dais with them? Like, obscene. But it gets worse because you guys might not have heard the latest update about 2 hours ago. Ooh. And I'm just gonna read the quote unquote apology, the non-apology apology from Nick Sirianni to the Philadelphia fans. I was trying to bring energy yesterday, and I'm sorry and disappointed how my energy was directed at the end of the game. I have to have better wisdom and discernment, and that wasn't the time. Listen, you jackass. It's not how your energy was directed. It's who your energy was directed to. We pay your salary in case you've forgotten. We show up in the stands in case you've forgotten. We bailed you out with a false start call at the end of the game that moved the Browns away from third and goal from the 3-yard line. It was the fans that won you that game, you dick. So let me make it perfectly clear. Your days are numbered, Nick Sirianni. You have 68,000 people that show up to the games against you and millions of more in the city. You have zero room for error. Your one little toe is on the edge of a cliff. It takes the mere wind of the next loss and you're a goner, buddy. We're all out to get you. Now we can discuss the...
Did you guys win the game? Yeah, you won, right? If you lose that game, is he fired today?
Yes. Yes. There are people that are disappointed that we pulled that out because he would have been gone. I just, you know, Jeff Lurie, he's a great owner. He is a great owner that goes out and tries to get whatever he can for this city and for that team. I don't think he stands for this kind of stuff. This did not sit well. And let me tell you, when Sirianni did his presser today, he looked like he was a prisoner.
Okay, now
that was in a lot of trouble.
This is not going to be well received by one house, but I do want to remind you that Sirianni has a history of chirping at fans, and it's just often been the other team's fans when they've been winning games. And nobody in Philadelphia didn't like it then. Nobody said shit about it when he was, you know, talking smack to guys, you know, on the other teams when they were
losing. I agree with you. It's all childish. And let me just say this. as bad as Pope feels about the Cowboys, I'm just going to go on record and say this. We are the worst team in the NFC East. We are going to lose to the Giants. I watched all of that game last night. There were some inopportune penalties, a sack caused interception, but that offense can move.
That interception was thrown after he looked right at a wide open guy in the flat and decided to hold the ball instead.
The offense can move. That offense is capable of moving, and you have a good defense. It's not an average defense. You have a good defense and shut down a pretty powerful offense. We are going to lose to the Giants, and I don't know what happens against the Jaguars. Maybe we beat them, and then I think we lose to the Bengals. But we are the worst. We are the worst team in the NFC.
Then you got the Cowboys.
Yeah, we'll lose there for sure. That's
for
a way.
Sure.
We will. Yes, for sure. You will finally get a home win, but we are the worst team in the NFC East. And while I will say that Jalen Hurts is probably better than Danny Dimes and Dak Prescott, we're going nowhere. We're going nowhere with this coach. And that is what is infuriating the city is. We have so much talent that's being wasted. It is so much talent that is being wasted. Now let's discuss the rest of the NFL.
Well, wow, before we get off the Eagles, how come
it's like reverse hold my beer? Like, no, my team's worse. No, you hold my beer. My team's worse.
Why did you guys not sign Hassan Reddick?
We thought that Bryce Huff was at least lateral move to be just as good as Hassan Reddick and cheaper. Mm-hmm. And as it turns out, Bryce Huff finally got half a sack and a tackle yesterday. Until then, he's been worthless. Hassan Reddick signed with what's his face today.
Did he sign with Buffalo?
No.
The Jets.
Yeah, because he got with the new agent. What's his face?
Rosenhaus.
Yeah, Drew Rosenhaus. And he's going to fix the whole thing. Did he sign already?
I don't know.
That's what I thought you were saying.
He signed with Drew Rosenhaus today. Right.
Yeah, and Rosenhaus will get it done, and he'll be on board with the Jets. We miss Reddick bad.
I told you last year, I said I hate that guy, and you thought I meant like on a personal level, but it was just because he was always all over the Commanders. I felt like he was a nightmare getting strip sacks at the worst time of the game for us. So I don't know. I think he's a good player.
I think that Mike McCarthy is equally bad to Nick Sirianni, but I think the Cowboys have plenty of talent on both sides of the ball. I think they will fix their issues. I think the Commanders are obviously on the trajectory up, and I think the Giants, I think they've got the right coach. By the way, if we'll trade almost any player on our team for Dable. If we get Dable, that would fix everything. What Dable is getting out of that putrid team is amazing, actually.
You already got Saquon. Just leave us alone.
Yeah, that turned out for him.
I don't think we should go a second longer talking about the NFL without mentioning the Detroit Lions Dallas Cowboys score, which was 47-9. Again, 47
yeah.
for Detroit, 9 for Dallas. It was Jerry's 82nd birthday.
Yeah, 82nd.
82nd birthday, and he got to see what was it? It was 47-9 Dallas
Origami.
On the losing end.
Three field goal performance by that offense. Pathetic.
So, Pope, what's the mood in Dallas?
Well, you know, we are not as, artful as our Philly friends as far as a feeding frenzy on a coach. Because everybody knows that McCarthy really isn't the coach of the Cowboys. It's Jerry Jones. He coaches, he owns, he manages. It's him. It's
he
all
coaches
him
too.
Well, I mean, pretty much. You know, if he could, he would. Let's put it that way. And McCarthy has no real power. It's all in Jerry, and everybody knows that. So you guys are calling for Sirianni's head. Everybody here is calling for Jerry's head, and they have been for a while, but it's really gotten with these four embarrassing home losses. Guys, they've been blown out in four straight games at home. Yeah, they got within a field goal of Baltimore, I guess, in the second half surge, but halftime games have been over at halftime in all of those games, and they've given up a record amount of points in the first three games at home. shattering records in the wrong way. Whatever they were going to do in the offseason didn't work because they didn't do anything. They didn't sign any free agents. They let CD and Dak linger and they didn't use their contract re-signings to go out and get anybody. They are injured. They're definitely on the defense. Parsons, Lawrence, others are out. No question they are not at full strength. But the performance that we saw yesterday was that of a team that has, if they haven't quit, they're about to quit, and it was just gutless. I mean, you could watch some of the players. Like Diggs, when David Montgomery was running at him, Diggs basically did the ole and got out of the way.
He did the Deion Sanders tackle.
Diggs was bad yesterday.
Yes, Diggs was bad. How about Zach Martin, our all-pro guaranteed Hall of Famer? He graded out at zero for pass protection, first time ever in his career.
Wow.
So it is across the board. God knows why they're running Zeke out. Rico Dowdle has his best game last week, and they run Zeke out, and they run him more than Dowdle, and Zeke gets 2 yards in a cloud of dust every time. And so any chance they had to get in a shootout, because they weren't going to stop the Lions, was you know, they're trying to run the ball, which is ridiculous, and they run the ball with that running back committee is even worse. So they deserve everything they got. It's not going to get any better, guys. They play at San Francisco, at Atlanta. Then they have Philly and Houston coming home. They could lose the next four games very easily. And McCarthy,
I think you lose three of those.
McCarthy could be out before Parsons even makes it back.
I watched that game, and it seemed to me the problem was with the players, not the coach. I don't understand what McCarthy did wrong. The players were outplayed.
A lot of that's coaching, though. You know.
Yeah, but the Lions were pissed from last year when they lost that
Dan
game.
Dan Campbell holds a grudge.
Bad call. And after the game, CeeDee Lamb and others were waving bye-bye to the Lions, and they do hold a grudge, and Dan Campbell's pissed. They rub your fucking noses in it.
Oh,
otherwise,
yeah.
How do you explain them calling a friggin' hook and ladder to a offensive tackle, Penei Sewell, who scores a touchdown on the play? How do you allow an offensive tackle to score a touchdown on a hook and ladder reception? They were rubbing
Campbell,
the Cowboys' noses in it, and no Cowboy stepped up and said, all right, enough is enough.
Dan Campbell told Ben Johnson to come up with all kinds of trick fuckery, and I mean, they had offensive linemen eligible 9 times. I mean, they were coming up with all kinds of potential trick plays. Absolutely. It was the biggest fuck you that Dan Campbell could deliver to Jerry on his birthday. And it was, look, from the anti-Cowboy faction, which there are many, and it's growing. It's a bandwagon of anti-Cowboys. This was beautiful because this is going to cause chaos. Now, Jerry, you know, was asked, are you going to make a coaching change? And he said, no, that's not even on the table, not even thinking about it. But 2 long weeks. We got to buy 2 long weeks with the Dallas media pressure. It's going to get ugly around here quick.
He's not going to do a thing. He never fought with the coach in midseason.
He fired Wade Phillips 10 years ago.
And then allowed Jason Garrett to have the next 10 years of mediocrity.
Here's what the Dallas fans and the Philly fans are rooting for tonight. They are desperately rooting for a Jets win to show that you can fire a coach midseason and still turn it around. I'm telling you, if the Jets can beat Buffalo, which I don't think is going to happen, there's going to be even more pressure on McCarthy and Sirianni.
But that happened last year when Antonio Pierce took over the Raiders. He got them going. So what? Jerry Jones isn't going to do a thing.
I don't think he will.
No, he's not going to fire himself. He's the GM, too.
He's not going to do a thing. And you know who the stupidest people are? Are the Dallas fans who keep buying tickets at probably at the highest price for mediocrity. But for some reason, everyone thinks it's 1990 to 1994 still in Dallas. It hasn't been for a long time. That's 30 years. Like, come on. Like, no, Dallas is not a great football.
Thank you for stating the obvious.
Says the Leafs fan with the, yeah. with, the Leaf, with the Leafs jersey on.
But I think it's but wait, Bruce's point. I'm gonna pile on Dallas anytime I can. Leave the Leafs alone. Leave the Leafs alone. The fact is, why do we continue to look at Dallas like they're relevant? They're not. They're a fucking garbage franchise. They're not relevant. I mean, they're really just not. They don't do anything. When they're good, they underachieve. When they're underachieving, they go really underachieving. I don't know. I mean, why do they get so much attention? It's not
America's
it's
team.
It's not deserved.
And
it's
why
not
does
deserved.
Dak get $60 million? I mean, that he's too. Not. He is not a good quarterback.
Well, that's just a function of timing. That's just a function of timing. They're talking about Sam Darnold's looking at $50 million next year, apparently.
I want to turn to the marquee matchup of week six, which shockingly nobody would have predicted this before the season started. But the marquee matchup of week six of the NFL was the border rivalry between the Ravens and the Commanders. And yeah. here's my question to Bison. Are DC fans today patting themselves on their back for a moral victory that we played close with the Ravens, or are you angry about losing a game?
Well, man, it's a good question. It's a tough one to answer. I don't think I don't know that moral victory is the right thing to say, because people felt like there were some bad calls. I hate blaming the refs, but a lot of the DC people you're hearing are blaming a lot of bad calls. And there were, you know, I honestly, at the time, I didn't think it was that unfairly officiated, but I've seen some things now that make it look like there were some really bad calls at some bad times. No, I don't want to say moral victory, and I hate that. But the reality is, this game 2 years ago would have been 40-12. You know, it just would have been a total blowout. I think there is some better feelings that the franchise seems like it can compete. Now, look, Baltimore is one of the top three teams in the NFL. They are, you know, shortlist Super Bowl contenders. I mean, that is. There's no reach in saying they are a favorite to win the Super Bowl. And I don't think anybody believes Washington's in that their league at this point. And we got exposed exactly where we knew we were bad.
Saying is your defense is not there yet.
Yeah, and our secondary in particular. Our secondary could not stop Flowers. And, you know, when we were able to stop Henry a little bit, it didn't matter because they could pick up 20 yards of play throwing to the ball to Zay Flowers. So moral victory, I don't think anybody feels that way, really, but it is nice to see that the franchise isn't a total joke like it's been for 25 years.
Well, you have a rookie franchise quarterback who keeps you in a game like that when the other team gains almost 500 yards against you.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to love that guy. He's the future.
Yeah, he looks legit, and it's just his calmness, and, you know, and there's a lot of things, you know, I mentioned it. He played 55 or 56 college games. Most quarterbacks coming out of college don't have that much experience. And then this VR virtual reality thing is pretty wild. I mean, and it's been getting a lot of press. And I think we talked about it last week.
He's already better than two of the quarterbacks in our division.
Yeah, I think he probably is.
Well, he looks good on a fantasy roster. I can tell you that.
I'll just say from a guy who probably should have won the MVP in his first full NFL season, caution, as I've said many times on this pod before, do not build the statue yet. This is I'm serious. Jalen was exactly what we were talking about at this stage of game six of Jalen's, you know, NFL career, as we're saying about Jane Daniels. It's a long season, and then it gets an even longer postseason, and then NFL defenses start figuring it out. This is a very encouraging NFL story, not just a DC story, but I think we should, like, and I'm sure this kid is going to stay humble himself, but that franchise and that kid should stay humble. It's a long way to go still.
No doubt about it. Now, I will say, and I think I might have texted you guys yesterday, but I do not remember a time since RG3's rookie year, 2012, where I've seen this many shirts, jerseys, t-shirts, hats, everything. I mean, it is, the city is back to being interested, and there is a huge Redskins football team Commanders fan base here that is just waiting to have a reason to cheer. You know, a couple bad years is one thing, but it has been 25 years of darkness. And so the fan base is pretty much ready to explode. Now, you know what? It's a big test next week because it shouldn't be, right? Carolina, not a good football team. That's a game that Washington, if they want to be serious and on the right path, then they need to take care of business and win that game and feel like they're in control the entire time.
They will.
They should, but let's see. Let's see what happens.
I think for the rest of the NFL, it's just NFL be on notice. The Bucs aren't playing around. I mean, I get it that it's Spencer Rattler and the New Orleans Saints who started off, you know, pretty dominant early in the season. I guess now the win against the Cowboys doesn't look as impressive as it did earlier in the year, but that team was up 27-23 and lost that game 51-27 to the Bucs. The Bucs are just a train that nobody wants to get in the way right now. It doesn't matter whether they're home
or away.
Well,
the Falcons didn't mind them, right?
Yeah, that'll be an interesting rematch for that one. Falcons remain impressive. I thought the Packers, I know the Cardinals aren't that great, but the Packers back with Jordan Love at the helm are going to be really, really tough out. And I think the Chargers, I know it's the Broncos, but the Chargers
who've been playing better.
They're playing better. I think the Chargers are going to be an interesting story later in the season as this team gels.
Don't count Harbaugh out.
What about the NFC North, though? You know,
oh, yeah. Crazy.
Winter, as they said in the headlines today, winter is coming.
Yeah.
The freaking Bears are 4-2. Can you believe that? The Bears are 4-2, and they're tied for third place, I guess, in the North because the Lions are 4-1. They had a bye.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Jags are bad, though.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Hang on. I want to talk about the North real quick, because you guys know how much I love a stat. The NFC North is 17-5. First time in history a division's had a 750 or higher through week 6. The NFL leader in point differential is the Vikings at plus 61. Then the Lions at plus 60, Bears at plus 47, Packers at plus 41. Everyone in the NFC North has a better point differential than every other team in the league. Suck on that.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, listen, you get one game against Dallas and that's mess it up. So, you know, but, hey, but let's talk about Detroit again for a second. Massive loss for them, yes. Right?
With Aiden Hutchinson. Yeah. I mean,
just, yeah.
Oh, sad.
Sad, terrible injury. Hopefully, hopefully it's something that he can come right back from. I don't like it. We've seen too many of those injuries in Washington. Albeit with quarterbacks, but you really worry about a break that bad. And what does that do to Detroit as a team moving forward? I mean, we know their offense is prolific. How does that going to affect the defense, though? It's got to be a big loss for them.
Massive sack leader.
Yeah. You would think they're in the market for a trade.
Yeah. Yeah, that's big hole.
They can go all in this year.
Yeah. All right, what else do we have from week 6 before
I wanted to ask you guys about this. This just came up today, not necessarily a week 6 game time issue, but Tua says now that he's coming back this year to play, and the Dolphins are on board with it.
Yeah.
He had the same kind of reaction to the last concussion that he did 2 years ago. When our guest doctor said that was a sign of a deep brainstem injury, not just a concussion. This guy's going to kill himself if he keeps this up.
He is. And along the lines of the Tua, Chris Olave, who's what, 2-3 year wide receiver, suffered concussion number 3 in his career. And very, very sad. These guys should not be playing. They are taking their life into their hands. Tua's next concussion is taking his life into his hands.
It's just not worth it.
Especially
get in the broadcast booth. Talk about football. Do something else.
Yeah, you've got enough money. I mean, you have generational money. It's just get out of there. Get out of there, man. All right. So let's see. We've got to cover. We got to do our locks. House. I mean, man, you're killing it. What is going on?
This is I am as some of my friends know back home, I am king of the driving range. So, so I can do things like our Plaxico bets. I'm 6-0.
Kind of like the Phillies.
But yes, gents, we went 5-0 as a pod last week. So we're doing good. And I think I sent around that we are 20-10 on the season. So for all of our listeners that had lost your money in the past on us, get back on our train. We are ready to bring you more generational wealth. So
now, House, to that point, I have received a motion from a listener.
Oh.
Cousin Justin has made a request that we not overlap our picks, that we can't have the same Plaxico as another SMQB.
That's a good one.
That's fair.
He emailed me. He told me you were ignoring him, and he emailed me that. And I was tempted to say, hey, enough.
He told me two people were ignoring him. Yeah, he said you were ignoring him too. So. Yeah.
He's our number one stan. I feel like we need to go with it.
I think that's fair.
That's not fair to the people who pick fourth and fifth, though.
Well,
I don't think anyone's going to take my pick or Milk's pick. I don't think.
All right.
So let me. Milk can't join us because we're all praying for Milk and getting his electricity back and all that stuff that's happened in Tampa. But Milk is going to stay on the Tampa train and take the Bucks +3.5 home against the Ravens. They are home dog +3.5 to the Ravens.
Good game.
Yeah,
that's a tough one.
Wow. I might take the Ravens.
Yeah,
I would take the Ravens.
I don't think anybody else is going to take this one, so I'm going to go in the interest of the Cousin Justin rule. I am jeopardizing my 6-0 record by taking the 49ers -1.5 versus the Chiefs. I think they get their revenge, and I think the Chiefs become part of the defeated group. Was anybody going to take that?
No,
I don't think so.
It's a decent pick. I said last week that the 49ers have a statement game coming up, and they made their statement, and they look good.
All right.
I'm going to go against House's advice, and I'm going to take the Eagles -3.5 at the Giants. The Giants are terrible. I don't care what anyone says. They're terrible. They're worse than the Eagles and the Cowboys.
The reverse hold my beer bet.
So I'm going to take the Bengals -4.5 on the road against Cleveland because I think Cleveland is terrible. Now, I admit, I don't know quite what's happening with the Bengals offense, but I think Cleveland is absolutely atrocious, and I think the Bengals think are going to have a breakout game.
I think that's a good pick.
Awesome. Well, the game I had picked, nobody touched. I'm feeling it, Bison. I think the Panthers are going to get smoked in Washington. So I'm taking the Commanders and giving 7.5.
Wow.
That's good.
Panthers suck. You guys will rebound.
Moose, you want to make a guess pick?
Yeah, I'll take the Indianapolis Colts -3.5 against the Dolphins in Indianapolis.
I think that's a good pick, Moose.
It's a good pick.
Yeah.
Good pick. All right, we got to do the parlay, the SMQB parlay.
Oh, how about last week?
Which, by the way, if you followed our advice last week, it was the Falcons giving 6.5. What was the first? The first leg was the over in the Baltimore Washington game, and I think it was.
I have it here somewhere. It was the Texans, the Commanders over, and the Falcons.
Yeah, and if you put $50 on that, you won $355. So that was a good one.
Wow.
Generational wealth.
This week.
Let it roll. Right,
what do we think of this one? I've got the Bengals -4.5 with the over in the Texans Green Bay game, the over being 47.5.
I love that.
Oh, that sounds low.
A $50 bet there gets you 186.
You don't want to throw a third one on there to press your luck?
Let's not get crazy this week. We did that last week.
I love how our wager has gone up from $20 to $50 after a big win this week.
Well, yeah, no,
I won $355 last week. I mean, come on.
All right. Bengals -4.5 and Texans Green Bay over 47.5, right?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Yep.
Got it.
Yep. All right. This is the big moment. This is what we've been waiting for. It's the Moose Jaw hockey preview. Somebody write down what he says this year so that next year we don't have to go back to the tape.
Don't have to go back to cousin Justin, but I still have beef with. Okay. All right. In the interest of time, I'm going to abbreviate a little bit because I'm running up against Thanksgiving dinner here in Canada.
Happy Canadian Thanksgiving.
What do you eat for Thanksgiving?
Yeah, what does one?
Moose, obviously.
Moose?
Well, if you run one over on the highway, yeah.
What a delicacy.
Anyways, first of all, thanks for having me again. I'm happy to be here. And let's go right to the cream of the crop in each division. In the Atlantic, it comes down to three teams, the Leafs, the Panthers, and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Toronto's biggest acquisition is getting rid of Sheldon Keefe and bringing in Craig Berube. I'm actually feeling optimistic. You guys know I have never been very optimistic going into a hockey season with the Leafs. This year I am. Florida's defending Stanley Cup champions, world-class goaltending, world-class coach. They did lose some depth. If they run into some injuries, they could have some trouble. If Sam Bennett's going to be a big factor. I don't think he can do 50 goals again, but they're still pretty solid on the back end. Tampa Bay has the best coach in hockey. I'm not sure how much Steve Stamkos leaving is going to affect just because of his age. And bringing in Jake Guentzel, I don't think is a solution. That being said, when you have Victor Hedman and that goaltending, you can go a long way. But I see the Leafs coming out of the Atlantic. The Metropolitan, probably the worst division in hockey.
Oh, come on, man.
What's worse? Tell me what's the worst division. To be honest, New Jersey, I know they're 4-0-1 or 4-1 so far. They lost to the Leafs. Sheldon Keefe is a terrible coach. This team might do fine in the regular season, but in the playoffs, New Jersey will lay an egg. It's going to come down to the Rangers and the Hurricanes. My issue with the Rangers right now is what's going on with Shesterkin. He was offered an 8-year, $88 million contract that he turned down last week. That would have been the largest yearly salary for a goalie by $3 million. And he turned that down. So I'm wondering what's going on in New York internally. Within that dressing room, maybe he gets signed. If he does, they're going to be fine, but he's probably the best. Rangers are still solid, but turn that down. I don't understand.
Uh-oh. Canada's starting to freeze. We had a freeze there, Moose.
Karen cut the connection because he's late for dinner.
He's late for dinner.
Sorry. So it's going to come down, I think, to the Rangers and the Hurricane. Yes, I didn't mention the Flyers or the Penguins because they ain't going to be in the playoffs this year.
Boo.
You can boo all you want, but reality is reality. You might want Sirianni coaching the Flyers by Christmas.
Wow.
Wow. I hope you're familiar with the Rookie of the Year trophy in the NHL.
I am. And Tortorella is not one that really treats rookies all that well. So let's see if those guys are crying by Christmas or not. In the Central, I love the Blackhawks. They're not going to be in the Stanley Cup Finals. They're not going to be competing for it. But if Connor Bedard stays healthy the entire year, he is the next generational player. They added a lot of good pieces over the summer. I think they'll make the playoffs. Nashville, Stamkos, Marchessault, a couple other guys that are on the back end of their careers. So in terms of big name signings, Nashville won the summer. They'll make the playoffs. Broadway's going to be fun during the summer, though I don't think they'll go far in the playoffs. But in the Central, you've got the Jets, the Stars, and the Avalanche. Those three teams are going to dominate and come out. And I actually think the Stars are going to come out of that.
Moose! Yeah.
And in the Pacific, I'm not trying to gain favor with Mr. Pope there, but I actually believe in Dallas this year.
Hey, off to a good start.
Yeah,
they were West finalists last year.
They were. In the Pacific, I know Edmonton's 0-3. Last year, they were like 1-12, went to the finals. It's coming down to Edmonton and Vancouver. Edmonton is the class of the Pacific. So I've got conference finals, Toronto and Rangers, Dallas and Edmonton. And Edmonton
Toronto and Rangers.
Yeah.
I just got to want to mark this down. Toronto and Rangers and what?
Dallas and Edmonton.
Okay.
And I've got Edmonton beating Toronto in the finals.
An all Canada final?
I do. I know. When I wrote it down, I couldn't believe it. The fascinating part about this season, a couple things. Connor Bedard, as long as he stays healthy, and the OV watch is going to be something to watch.
Wait. Are you going with the winner of Edmonton, Toronto?
I said Edmonton.
Yeah, you went with the winner.
Oh, okay.
I said Edmonton. But I got to tell you, the OV watch is on. I don't know if he can get 42 this year. I think he can get 35 this year. And that'll be fun to watch if he gets hot in the first 20 games. Man, he's a train who will wreck some nets. And I think Gretzky is pulling for him to break the record. I think a lot of people are. I think he's been a phenomenal generational player. I hope he breaks the record. The MVP is going to come down to McDavid, Matthews, and MacKinnon. And I think Shesterkin wins the Vezina Trophy for the best goal.
All right. So I got a question. Give us three names you haven't told us right now that we should be watching.
Throughout the league?
Yeah, anywhere. Three guys. If you had to tune in and watch a game that's on, who do you want to see?
Okay, I'm going to tell you guys, this is a hometown bias. Willie Nylander is number one. Nylander had 99 points last year. He's had three straight 40-goal seasons. He's getting stronger, and I think he's going to flourish under Craig Berube. He is an exciting player. I got to tell you, every time you watch Sidney Crosby, I'm amazed. He is 20 years in the league. He got an assist the other night in Toronto. He's 1 point away from 1600. He's not slowing down, and he's in there battling. And I will tell you,
how many brain cells do you think that guy's lost since he started playing?
Not as many as Tua.
Yeah.
On the Tua meter, where is he?
Yeah. And you know what? Not because Toby's here, but I am interested to see how the two rookies in Philly do.
Let's go.
Because
What are their names?
Matvei Michkov and Jet Luchenko.
There you go. And one of them is a tribe member. So on draft day, Toby texted me and asked him if I knew him.
Just like Christopher Columbus.
Now it does turn out that a good buddy of mine, who I play golf with, is his agent. So there is a connection. It's one degree of separation. But I'm interested, and honestly, I hope Torts doesn't destroy those kids.
Michkov is special. He's really fun already to watch.
But again, we don't know what these coaches do to these kids behind the scenes. And that's my biggest concern. Look, what Mike Babcock did, when it finally came out, what he did to young players and veterans was horrific. He destroyed them mentally. And it's really sad. And I'm just hoping that these kids don't get abused by Torts, because he has that reputation. Those are the guys I'd watch for. And again, just my favorite to watch is going to be Connor Bedard all year.
All right. Good stuff. Anybody have anything else on hockey for Moose? We got to let him get to his turkey.
Yeah. It is turkey. And I actually have to go carve. So I'm going to say goodnight.
Happy Canadian Thanksgiving.
Thanks for being here on the holiday. We appreciate it. Enjoy the poutine. Always good to see you. Turkey poutine.
That sounds like an appetizer.
Or dessert.
Okay.
Guys, it's been a pleasure. I will see you all very soon. Be well.
All right.
All right, Moose Jaw.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
See you in July.
What do you guys? You guys think you had any idea what he's talking about? Or is he just pulling all that shit out of
his mouth? I think he knows.
What's the over-under on him denying he picked Edmonton at the end of the
season?
You got it all written down this time.
Right. Yeah, I do too. Over the
Take
Rangers.
A picture of that. Put it right in your notes app, Toby. We know where you save your bets. So. All right. Hey, Rooster, let's talk a little baseball here.
Yeah, you know, I think there are two really interesting stories right now in the playoffs. The first one is the two leading MVP candidates have been held in check so far. It's not gotten as much publicity, but the Mets held Ohtani to four hits and 20 at-bats with 10 strikeouts. And the story is that the strategy is...
You mean
Padres?
What?
Padres. I'm sorry, the Padres in the last round held Ohtani to 4 for 20. And their strategy was to pitch him high and tight, give him a little chin music, and apparently it shook him. So it'd be interesting to see if the Mets are able to pull that off with him. And of course, we've been talking about it, and the press has been all over the fact that Aaron Judge is struggling mightily in this playoffs and in other playoffs. Against the Royals, he batted 154 in four games with five strikeouts. That's terrible, especially coming off the season he had. For his career, he's 207 in the playoffs, even though in the career batting average of 288. And House and I kind of talked about this a little bit today by text. It seems to me that he's a very patient hitter. He usually during the season is not swinging at bad pitches. He waits until he gets his pitch and hits it hard. And I think he feels he's such a conscientious guy. I think he feels like he needs to produce for the fans, and he gets into the postseason and he's trying too hard and swinging way too aggressively at pitches he would never swing at in the regular season. He just needs to calm down and get back to who he is, and then he'll do well. But it's kind of interesting that both of these guys are struggling. These phenomenal hitters who had gigantic years this year are doing nothing in the playoffs, but their teams are so good they keep winning. The other interesting story to me is the Cleveland Guardians bullpen is so good that under some measures, they're the best bullpen in the history of Major League Baseball. And they are so good that in their series against the Tigers, their relief pitchers pitched 64% of the innings in those games. They barely used the starters. The starters were 15%. Plus in some of these games. That bullpen is fantastic, but they're running up against the Yankees bullpen that is on a lucky streak. They haven't been as good during the year, but they didn't give up a run against the Royals. So that's going to be a interesting battle to see. What do you guys think about your predictions? Yankees versus Guardians, Mets versus Dodgers.
Well, I don't know if you guys are following it now, but the Mets are up 6-1, bottom of the sixth.
Yep.
And to your point, Rooster, Otani's 0-for-3. I heard a good stat yesterday from John Smoltz. He said that Otani, when he has nobody on base, is abysmal. But when he has runners on, he was 5-for-7 in the series. So I think it kind of surprises me they keep him at leadoff if he's not performing with no runners on base. I would put him back in the lineup. I think that's going seven. I think the Mets, today coming back as strong as they did after getting smoked last night 9-0, I think that's going to go seven. I've got the Dodgers winning and I've got the Yankees winning, and I think we're going to see an all-time World Series classic.
Mets are pesky. They're really pesky, and their pitcher today is a very, very good postseason story. Sean Manea, he was incredible against the Phillies. He obviously has been incredible against a monster Dodgers lineup, all from changing what was upstairs in his head and a slight change on this crossbody throw. If you've been following that story, it's really interesting how he changes pitching mechanics. That's a good postseason story. But I want to follow up on what Rooster said, because I've been texting you guys that I think the story of this postseason has been about the bullpen and whether or not bullpens can hold on. It turns out in that game, that decisive game five that Cleveland took down Skubal and the Tigers. Cleveland pitched seven relievers in that game, which is just crazy. And talk about stats. In the Fangraphs top 100 war for pitchers, the best performing pitchers, Cleveland has one in the top 100, Tanner Bibby. They got hurt bad by the injury bug in the season, losing two of their starters, and they've relied upon their bullpen. But here's something that's really interesting that may be the difference that favors the Yankees. Cleveland had, just the way the ALDS worked out, there were multiple in-between days that the bullpen was able to rest. There's only two off days in this seven-game series with the Yankees and Cleveland.
Correct, and you have the length of the series. I mean, it's easy to run through your whole bullpen if you're in a best-of-five series, but now the best of seven, that's hard to do.
They had off days in the five-game series. They had off days after the first game, the second game, the fourth game, giving the bullpen a rest. They won't get it in this, and I think both of these series will go at least six games, possibly both going seven games. I just don't know how the Mets Dodgers are going to play out. The Mets are so pesky, and this whole, like, it's the right time and they got the mojo, and for everything that we've been saying about the Mets, they were far and away the best team since the All-Star break. They've been the best team in all of baseball.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think the Yankees are going to pull this out. I think Cleveland's starting pitching is going to fail them and the bullpen's going to get tired and they don't have enough firepower in their lineup. I think we may be seeing a Subway series. Yes. I really do.
Yes.
Wow.
I think a Subway series could happen.
That's what I'm rooting for.
Wow. All right. Anything else on postseason baseball?
What you got, Bison?
I feel a little bit like House does. I mean, I think the Dodgers are going to win that series, but I don't have any confidence against the Mets. They just have that destiny feel to them right now. And, you know, Lindor, we talk so much about all the MVP prospects of Judge and Bobby Witt Jr. And Ohtani. We never really talked too much about Lindor, who's, you know, he's MVP caliber player.
Certainly lately he is.
And so lately he is,
hit,
for sure.
Hit a, lead, yeah. hit a leadoff homer today to get it going.
Yeah.
The so, Met I mean, version of the captain, the quintessential captain.
Yeah. And so I don't know what I tend to think the Dodgers are going to pull it out, but I'm not sure. And I do think the Yankees are going to pull it out.
By the way, Anthony Rizzo was activated today.
Interesting.
Oh, interesting. Well, the thing about the Yankees and just, you know, on Judge, I mean, pretty small sample size, right? I mean, what are we talking about? Four games? Because they had
this
the bye.
Yeah,
this year in the postseason. So you finished off the Brewers, right, in four games? Was it the Brewers?
No, the Royals.
No, the Royals, sorry, Kansas City, and in four games. So, you know, Judge is going to be okay. I think Judge is going to be just fine.
All right.
That's what I got.
So let's hope
so. All right. All right, Pope, talk to us a little college football. Got a minute for that.
Yeah. What a great weekend it was. Four overtime games in the top 25. Two games were top 25 teams against each other. We learned some things. There was a question of going into what we're going to learn this week. We learned that Lincoln Riley is probably going to be in trouble pretty soon. That was a huge game. If they could have won, would have really helped him. And losing just puts him in the wrong way. Penn State still undefeated, still a long way to go, though. Ole Miss goes down to LSU. LSU pulls out the overtime win. A great fourth down save by LSU's Nussmeier, quarterback, to put him into overtime. Then they win. Brian Kelly finally wins a big game. Question mark, is LSU, you know, potentially going to make a run at the playoffs now? Tennessee survives against Florida. Florida is god awful. And, you know, what does that tell us about Tennessee going into playing Alabama this weekend? And then Illinois beat Purdue in overtime. Bama struggled to beat South Carolina 27-25. Arguably, they should have lost that game. South Carolina had the ball, a chance to win through an interception. Kalen DeBoer is definitely feeling it. Now, after the Vandy loss and the South Carolina almost lost debacle at home in Tuscaloosa. But all, you know, all of that can be taken care of if they take care of Tennessee. Third Saturday in October, game Saturday afternoon up at Rocky Top. That's going to be a big game. It's not an elimination game for the playoffs, but the loser of that game is going to be in big trouble. We'll probably have to win out to make a playoff.
Kieran DeBoer, if he loses that game in Tennessee, after in three consecutive weeks, almost losing three consecutive games, what does it mean to Kieran DeBoer if he loses that game?
It's going to be, you know, that would be tough. Two out of three games. The comparisons between him and a Saban team are going to be, they're already happening, but they would just increase. I mean, he's not going to get fired. It's just going to be very uncomfortable. And Alabama at that point will realize they're probably not going to make the playoffs unless something changes big time. So, I mean, you know, Josh Heupel, I mean, this is a huge game Saturday afternoon. But the big game of the weekend is Georgia going down to Austin, to play the most dominant team by far in college football is UT this year. Their defense has given up three touchdowns. They blew out their blood rival OU at the Big Red, the Red River rivalry this week. And it was scoreboard was probably not even as close, whatever, as the game was. I mean, it was a blowout by all dimensions. Game is Saturday night. Game day is going to Austin. It's going to be a wild game. I got so many Orange Blood buddies who are just living for Saturday night. But that's going to give us an indication. Georgia, with two losses, is going to have struggle to make the playoffs also. But can UT win? And I do look for a big UT win on Saturday night. But, you know, college is...
Hope,
is
yeah. I got one question for you. I've got a single ticket, 50-yard line. It's SMU versus North Carolina or Alabama versus Auburn. Which ticket are you taking? That's all the American people want to know right now.
Well, I'm still taking Alabama-Auburn ticket. I mean, I would never give that up.
I have a question for Pope,
SMU
too.
Could be ranked higher.
Pope's been going through his whole spiel, and he talked, I would say, 90% of the time about the SEC. Meanwhile, there's one SEC team in the top five right now, and that's a team that wasn't even in the SEC a year ago.
It's an import.
Were you ever going to talk about Oregon or Ohio State or Miami?
Oh, I have that down. I just went over. I glossed over because we were going so quick. But, yeah,
okay.
Tell us about that game. Anybody who saw it, that was a great game.
It was a hell of a game. It was a hell of a game. Either team could have pulled it out at the end.
I mean, the Ohio State quarterback.
Quarterback choked.
Yeah, I mean,
horrible.
Yeah, but
by the way, did you guys see that whole sequence with Dan Lanning and the 12 players? Does anybody think that was done on purpose?
Was that intentional?
100%.
It cost you do think four, so, Pope?
Yeah, it cost him 4 seconds. Absolutely.
Wow. I mean, I really give the guy credit.
And the analysis of that is like it looks like Lanning is actually pushing the guy to get out. To be the 12th man, it's like intentional, like get out there to do. It wasn't a mistake. It was intentional.
Interesting.
Well, how could they fix a rule to?
Yeah, I mean, that needs to be fixed.
Well, so wait. So let's just explain to the listeners what the rule was and how it was used. I heard about it, but
so there was 10 seconds. There was 10 seconds left and Ohio State had the ball and.
One timeout.
First, Oregon called a timeout. And then out of the timeout with 10 seconds left, they ran a play that was incomplete, but Oregon had 12 men on the field, which meant that the ball advanced just 5 yards to about the 45, 50-yard line, but it took 4 seconds off the clock. So it left Ohio State with only 6 seconds. So he basically said, I will trade 5 yards, which is still – out of field goal range in exchange for leaving them only 6 seconds with no timeouts. And that's the trade he made.
Well, that was the difference in the game.
The way to fix that is you like in the NFL, if you break the huddle with 12 guys, don't they blow the play dead and call the penalty right there on defense? Or is that just an offense? Either way, you could blow the play dead. Once there's 12 men on the field, coming in, you could blow it dead or you got to put the time back on from the previous
right.
play.
In the final
inside
minute
of 2 minutes
or
something.
Yeah,
yeah, right, there has to be a rule that you can't reward a team for doing what they did. But
right.
if they had that 4 seconds, then they would have got the opportunity for about a 40-yard winning field goal.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
It was crazy. All right.
Dodgers are making a run. It's 6-3, first and third with one out, bottom
yeah,
of
six. Yeah, all bets are off if the Dodgers don't count come back out. On this game.
Yeah. All right, who's got a lasso? Or I'm sorry, no, we got to do punchable face first. Who's got a punch? Anybody? Call it a
comeback. I've got one.
Oh, good. Okay.
You have one, House? You want to go
first?
No,
I already punched him. I already punched Sirianni.
All right. I'm going to punch the Associated Press for their preseason college basketball rankings.
Uh-oh.
They're coming out with Kansas number one, which they did again last year at this time. And, of course, Kansas didn't even make it to week two of March Madness. They've got Alabama, a team that is so not a basketball program that even Pope is not on their bandwagon.
They were very good last year.
For basketball.
Yeah, final four last year.
Number two. And freaking UConn, which is going for a three-peat at number three. There's so much UConn hate out there. It's a disgrace. It's
they're
a
number
disgrace.
Three.
They should be number one. They were number one at the end of the last two seasons. They should be number one to start this one. It's a
That's
disgrace.
Hilarious. That's hilarious.
Okay.
Wow, that's quite a punch.
Any other punches?
Don't you have one?
No,
Bryson?
I don't think so.
You're not going to punch. You're not going to punch Nate Silver.
Nate Silver.
Oh no, I'm not going to put him. That was such a dumb tweet, though. He deserves it. That was a stupid tweet. It was like, show me you don't know anything about what's happening in sports without saying you don't know how anything's happening in sports. That was terrible.
For our fans, Nate Silver dumped all over DC sports saying that they're a pathetic sports city.
Yeah,
and they're
but
punching below their weight.
It wasn't that. It wasn't that. There's a good argument there. It was the fact that he was blasting like the Commanders and saying the Caps were the only thing carrying the water. Like, that's just not accurate. Like, that is just not accurate. So, I mean, if you're going to say we're a shitty sports town and all our teams are punching below their weight, at least get it right. That's all. That's all I'm saying. All right. Who's got a lasso?
Barbecue sauce.
I got one. I think I gotta give a lasso to Jessica Campbell, who has become the first full-time NHL female assistant coach, 32 years old, hired by the Seattle Kraken, and is on the bench this year as the first full-time female assistant in the NHL. So I think that's a good story. Good for her.
Great story. It's a great story.
Anybody else got a lasso? Buzzer beaters. House, what do you got?
I got a shout out to our great armed forces, and particularly the very, very real college football teams of Army and Navy, who, for the first time since 1960, are both ranked in the top 25, with Army at 23 and Navy at 25. These teams are legit. Navy has a very, very good offense. Army has one of the best defenses in the entire country and a pretty good offense to boot. The Army-Navy game this year is going to be electric.
Nice. That is fun. Rooster, you got one?
A buzzer?
Yeah.
Well, I don't have a buzzer. I do have a pour out that I'd like to do.
I got a buzzer, and then we'll do a pour out.
Go ahead.
We go back to F1 racing this week down in Austin.
Yes.
At Dakota, and Lando's trailing Max by 78 points. Can he start closing the gap? It's going to be fun to watch the guys. It feels like it's been a while since we've had a race, and it's going to continue to be a great season.
I'll give a quick buzzer, sticking with the running theme that Rooster's going to make fun of me about, but congratulations to Sam Chalanga
and to
Elizabeth Sullivan, the two winners, men's and women's, of the Army 10-miler. 28,000 people showed up to run the course yesterday, and I would highly recommend everyone do it. It's an amazing course. And also, when the wounded warriors go out first, it's pretty breathtaking to see those competitors out there, too. So that's my buzzer beater.
Way to go, Bison and Tracy, for finishing that one. That was great.
Good job.
Rooster, give us your pour out.
Last week on the 8th, we lost a legend in Major League Baseball, El Tiante, Louis Tiant, died at age 83. He played 19 years in the major leagues and then became a Red Sox announcer doing the Spanish radio for many, many years. He was such a character and had so many inventive deliveries where he would like do the graduated down, you know, move with his glove and then turn his back and look up at the sky. People forget, though, early in his career, he was a hell of a pitcher. He, in 1968, was 21-9 for the year, came in fifth for the MVP, and had a 1.60 ERA for Cleveland. He was then traded to Minnesota, where he just didn't have a very good 1969-1970, and then traded to the Red Sox in 1971, had a 1.91 ERA for the season. Career-wise, he had 229 wins and a 3.3 ERA, and none other than my man, the straw that stirs the drink, Reggie Jackson, called him the Fred Astaire of baseball. He was so fun to watch pitch. I mean, you know, you think Mark Fidrich and sometimes even Nestor Cortez have some interesting antics on the mound and delivery styles. None of it compared to Louis Tiant. He was so fun to watch. It was beautiful. So rest in peace, El Tiante.
Nice one.
That's a good one.
All right, you guys, anybody got anything else? All right. We'll have we got another NFL game tonight. We got some more baseball postseason. We will be back next week. And we have week game Cowboys.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay. And he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.